Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone.
But we can't ignore the math, okay? We can't ignore the data.
Go on Google Trends, type in your name, then type in mine. You're a straight line. I'm a pyramid.
I like the very direct question on that.
Television ratings, downward spiral. Buy rates plummeting.
The time is now to turn the math around.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Pollock and Thurston. I am John Pollock, joined by Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics. As always, hello, Brandon.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing better. Did you get this torrential downpour earlier this week in Buffalo, or was this confined to Southern Ontario? Because Toronto looks like the set of Waterworld.
Really? It wasn't torrential. It's sunny today. It was raining at times. No torrential downpours, though.
Well, we are recovering as a city after some of the videos are just insane, like cars that have been mauled. Our new recently renovated subway station downtown, the subway station you'd be familiar with, Brandon, Union Station, that you and I were walking
by,
just flooded. I mean,
really?
It is a mess here. Wow. In the city. I didn't think rain would have such a destructive outcome here on the city, but you can go search out videos. That is what's going on in the city of Toronto. But we digress. We have plenty to chat about today, including the latest in regards to the Janelle Grant case. We have a new filing that is out, bringing another figure into the spotlight. We will also be speaking about AEW television rights. I think those might creep their way into the discussion today. We are also going to speak about AEW's upcoming residency that kicks off this Saturday in Arlington, Texas. And we'll hopefully be chatting a little bit about the G1 climax. And Brandon and I, we are like the Keanu Reeves, okay, of in the Matrix, okay? We get thrown curveballs literally 4 minutes before we go to air. But you know what? Pass us the ball. We're ready. We just give us the shot. That is what we are doing. Hopefully we will be joined by a guest in the next hour. We will find out. That is going to be the dramatic subplot of today's Pollock and Thurston. Will a guest show up or not?
We may be actively trying to book a guest right now.
You're going to see producer John Pollock here in action for the first 20 minutes of this show, depending on who gets back to us, because sometimes you just have to roll with the flow. And look at this. We might have breaking news. Oh, everybody, Karen Peterson will be on to chat about the G1 climax in about 30 minutes time. I am going to have a Pollock and Thurston MVP trophy constructed that will be sent to Karen Peterson. She will be joining us and part of Post Wrestling's G1 coverage. So there you go. Weight off our shoulders. Breaking news. Karen Peterson coming to Pollock and Thurston, saving the day, as always. Well, let's first go into a story that Brandon and I had out first earlier this week, and that regards the Janelle Grant case. And Brandon, you want to go through just some of the Cole's notes here of this bill of discovery, this complaint that has been filed. This is not a lawsuit that is being filed, but rather the seeking of electronic medical records, which are alluded to in the initial case from this past January.
Yeah, so this is a story that was told partly in the original complaint, which of course came out in January of this year. Janelle Grant, the former employee who's suing WWE and Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis over sex trafficking and other things in civil court in Connecticut. So this is in state court, but this is a story that was mentioned in that long complaint. It's a long complaint, 67 pages, I believe. And this is one story that's told about how Vince sent her to what's referred to in that complaint as alternative clinic with celebrity doctor. And there are a lot of similarities between celebrity doctor and Dr. Carlin Kolker and his medical facility, Peak Wellness. And so she's alleging here that she was given substances, medicines, supplements that she does not know and was not told the nature of. She was given prescriptions that she was not told what these were. And again, she says that she was directed by Vince McMahon and she felt pressured by Vince McMahon to go to this facility. We have comments from Vince's side saying otherwise, but, she says that she doesn't know what she was being given in the forms of pills, the supplements that she describes, and in the form of IV, transfusions is not the word, but you know, IV drips, which is something that this facility does. So she was this filing says that she has been given some paper records at this point, but they are not complete according to her. And there's inconsistencies in the records that have been provided. She is seeking the electronic medical records to help her obtain evidence in this ongoing civil lawsuit that's in federal court, which, as we know, has been put on hold for 6 months, set to possibly resume maybe sometime in December, but is on hold pending the federal, possibly criminal investigation that's going on from the Southern District of New York, perhaps looking at sex trafficking, as reported by the Wall Street Journal.
Yes. So the key is that they have, Grant side has attempted to get medical records from this Peak Wellness facility, and they have received some paper records, but they are stating they are incomplete. They want the electronic records. They want a more thorough examination of what it was that she was prescribed, what she took. Now, going back to the lawsuit that was filed in January, kind of the relevant sections here, if we go and read straight from the lawsuit. In November of 2019, Ms. Grant informed McMahon that her doctor suggested that her symptoms stemmed from trauma and ongoing stress, and McMahon mocked her, calling it emotional trauma, my ass. However, on November 20th, 2019, McMahon insisted that Ms. Grant see a physician of his choosing. This physician is referred to herein as Celebrity Doctor, and the facility that Celebrity Doctor operated from is referred to herein as Alternative Clinic. McMahon and Celebrity Doctor assured Grant that her bills at Alternative Clinic would be taken care of under McMahon's account. After the initial visit, it became apparent to Ms. Grant that McMahon and Celebrity Doctor wanted Ms. Grant to remain in the care of Celebrity Doctor's practice, and Ms. Grant felt pressured to do so. Celebrity Doctor made comments about how they, referring to McMahon and Alternative Clinic, had, quote, saved her life, and Celebrity Doctor often remarked how Ms. Grant was unable to even make eye contact with the Celebrity Doctor during their initial sessions, an obvious sign of trauma. And it went on to kind of describe the attention she received, and as well that how long the sessions would last, and how she as well would leave from celebrity doctors' deep dives into her personal and work life as a, quote, coach focused on behavioral science. So Brandon and I have reached out to pretty much all of the parties associated with this, and we cannot necessarily state that one is the other, but you're certainly led to believe that this is, you know, that you can fill in the blanks here of who the celebrity doctor is and where this alternative clinic is in relation to what is being listed here, seeking the electronic medical records.
And I would say the comments from the Vince McMahon spokesperson that we've added to the story, right. They're certainly not denying that that one is the other. And I would say, if anything, that the comments that we have support that one is the other.
So this, we did get the response from, first from a spokesperson for Vince McMahon, and we can highlight that response that we received, where the spokesperson for Vince McMahon stated, quote, "Ms. Grant's petition for pre-action discovery against Dr. Kolker is a direct violation of the court-ordered stay and nothing more than an attempt to generate publicity on her false allegations and to harass people connected to Mr. McMahon, who is being sued by Ms. Grant in a separate matter." Now, in a response to that, Grant's attorney, Ann Callis, gave us a brief response to what was being accused here of Vince McMahon's side, just stating, quote, "We did not violate a federal stay by filing a state action against a non-defendant." So this might get lost in translation for some, but again, they are not suing this Dr. Carlin Kolker nor the Peak Wellness facility. This is a complaint where they are trying to obtain medical records and believing that it will support the overarching sex trafficking lawsuit that, as Brandon mentioned, is on pause pending this federal investigation that's ongoing.
Right. And Vince's side is positioning this as a violation of the stay on the federal case. And what Grant's side, through her attorney Ann Callis, is saying is that, and it's absolutely true that these are in different courts, the civil case that we've been covering for months is in federal court. That's the higher level court. And this petition to get evidence is at the state level in Connecticut.
Yes. In terms of WWE's involvement here, it's pretty much limited to the fact that this is referred to in the complaint as that there have been many referrals to this Peak Wellness medical facility for WWE talent without naming any names. But I mean, WWE is like loosely attached to this, but this is more so just related to these medical records and what exactly was going on and what the relationship was between Vince McMahon and Carlin Kolker, who at least is alleged here to have knowledge of the non-disclosure agreement, because Janelle Grant, I think the last time that she saw him was in April of 2022, which would have been after the NDA had been signed between Janelle Grant and Vince McMahon, that he brought up having knowledge of it when the payment was brought up and they wanted to make sure that they were going to be paid, and he made a reference to the NDA.
Yeah, and this is a doctor that, according to Grant, she says in one paragraph here that Dr. Kolker routinely treats employees and talent of WWE. This is Dr. Kolker here on the screen. He has this office in Greenwich, Connecticut, which is not far from Stanford. And he's a well-known celebrity doctor. If you search his name, which we did before we reported this, you can find a lot of celebrities that he has relationships with. He was on a reality show with Shaq. He has relationships with Jeremy Piven, with an NBA Celtics center whose name, unfortunately, I can't pronounce.
Kristaps Porzingis.
Thank you.
Basketball fans might come after us, but
thank you. He appeared in the documentary Bigger, Stronger, Faster about steroids, right?
That's right. This was the Chris Bell documentary that came out in 2008, and there's several loose connections here. Chris Bell was the brother of Mike Bell, who was an enhancement talent in WWE and in the Northeast, famously had a match on Metal with Perry Saturn, where Perry Saturn just destroyed this guy. But Chris Bell had like a cup of coffee on the writing team in WWE, later came out with this documentary that they kind of focused just on the steroid culture and, you know, Hulk Hogan being one of kind of the poster childs of, you know, some of these 80s action stars and the role of steroids in society as a whole. And Carlin Kolker was one of the talking heads who was came up very pro steroid, comparing, you know, the hysteria among steroids. Like, we don't have the same kind of hysteria towards peanuts, and peanuts are also dangerous.
Yes. I've seen the clip. The clip is out there. I think on Babyface V Heel, Twitter, if you want to see it, but he's a, there's pictures out there of him, and he's a jacked dude.
He is. That's a lot of peanuts. So anyway, we will be following this. We have reached out to Carlin Kolker, so if we get any response from him, he has not addressed this as of yet, and either with any filings or to us as well. But those requests have been made by us as we continue to follow this story, which continues to move forward. All right, let's chat about a few other topics, and then we're going to be shifting focus to G1. Let's talk a little bit about AEW. They are going to be going, well, tonight is their 250th episode of Dynamite, taking place from, I think, the only location that made sense for such a monumental episode, the Simmons Bank Arena in North Little Rock, Arkansas.
Yes. Have they ever been to this location before? I don't think they have.
At most, maybe once.
This is a WWE location for sure, but not AEW. Yeah.
So that is where they are tonight. They are doing Will Ospreay against MJF is kicking off the show. They have not announced if that will be a commercial free match, but that tends to be a gimmick they sometimes do for opening matches. But this coming weekend, they'll start their multi-date residency at the Esports Stadium in Arlington, Texas. This is definitely a location they have not been to before, and they will be running there from July 20th, this Saturday, through August 17th. They're also going to be doing the Death Before Dishonor show in the midst there. They're going to do some ROH tapings. They're going to be doing a lot of tapings from this location, which, as Brandon had reported, is set up for about 1,300 is what they can accommodate. And based on WrestleTix, the highest advance is for this July 27th show at 865 tickets out. So these are not going to be large shows by scale, but the question is, like, the level of savings that they are receiving for running over a month's time of all of these tapings rather than going on the road for Collision, and if there are additional kickbacks that they're getting running in Arlington.
Yeah, so this is going to be at a fixed location. It'll be very interesting to see how it comes across on TV. They're going to be there with Collision for a while. I was having some thoughts about AWTV rights. One of these ongoing stories that I almost feel like should be banned as a topic until there's a deal.
Guessing?
We're probably, I would have to think we're in the exclusive, we're out of the exclusive negotiating period. What do you think?
Oh, yes. I think by this point on July 17th, I would be very confident that we are outside of the exclusive negotiating window involving AEW and Warner Brothers Discovery.
Yeah, so in doing the math and thinking about, you know, what was the value of NXT's deal with CW, which is starting this coming fall? What is the value of NXT's CW deal? Average annual value.
Well, we have the belief that it is in the neighborhood of $25 million. Is that
25?
Roughly?
25. Yeah. So if you do the math on that, and we know that NXT is now doing similar ratings to Dynamite. Now, when this deal was made, what was this deal made last fall? I think the margin was wider. But NXT is now doing similar ratings. We even had a week here just this past week where NXT edged out Dynamite in the demo. I know it was a thin margin, but they edged out Dynamite in the demo while not beating AEW in total viewership, which tells you something about the shift in the age of the viewers over time here, when AEW has for so long been known as having the smaller audience and having a larger percentage of its total viewership in the demo. In any case, if $25 million is the going rate for the kind of viewership for a wrestling show that NXT is doing, which is similar to the kind of viewership that Dynamite is doing, then it tells you that, you know, I have a slide here with the math. You know, it tells you that, you know, the going rate for TV per hour of that viewership level is something like 12 and a half million. If you just take it down by hour, and if you extrapolate that onto AEW's 5 hours, even granting the fact that Collision and Rampage do lower viewership than NXT, but if you just extrapolate that onto AEW's 5 hours, we get something like $63 million in average annual value, which is in fact lower than what we believe I believe AEW is getting right now, which is something around 70, maybe even $75 million since the addition of Collision. So I'm struggling to figure out, you know, what's the real economic justification here for, especially if I'm, you know, if you were theoretically counseling David Zaslav to say, hey, look, this is how you justify paying as little as possible for AEW. Look at what NXT has done, and it's got really strong viewership, but it's going for $25 million in a fixed location. And maybe that is a big point of differentiation. Is that something that actually produces economic results, though, for WBD? I don't know. And it's something that it comes to mind here as Collision is about to be in a fixed location. And will it be that much different from the Performance Center in terms of the quality presentation, the production values?
Well, you can look at it two ways. That does the NXT deal pull down AEW's negotiating rights in these talks, and conversely, like, given the performance we have seen at NXT, is NXT undervalued now?
Yeah, it's almost inviting a conspiracy theory. Maybe WWE went to CW and said, "We'll give you this great bargain rate just to lower the going rate for AEW."
I don't buy that one for a second. With all due respect to the conspiracy theories out there on that one, this is a company that will absolutely not leave any penny on the table when it comes to their television rights fees, no matter what damage it could theoretically do. Maybe it's a nice silver lining of the deal that they got, but I think it's a fair assessment to look at NXT, that especially its growth in 18 to 34 that Brandon has outlined over the past, the first half of 2024, that you can look at NXT as like an undervalued deal. But, you know, all of this is happening at a time for AEW where, I mean, I don't know if you want to get into it, but the recent reports of what the WNBA is set to see their deals just explode could not have come at a greater time. The league has never been popular, more popular than now, and they are about to see a deal that goes from across their media rights partners from $50 million annually to $200 million annually, and over $2.2 billion over the next 11 years. So, like, when you talk about timing, I mean, the WNBA just hit the jackpot.
Yeah. So, AEW is getting right now about 70 and maybe 75, something in that neighborhood, average annual value. For them to be profitable, I think they need something, you know, maybe 150 average annual value. $200 million over the course of 5 years would be $1 billion. I look at this deal too, which is a 3x increase for the WNBA over what their current deal is. Now, this is a league that has exploded in popularity in the last 6 months or so. And the non-Caitlin Clark games have been positively affected too. It's not just one player and one team. But this is, I would have to think in terms of tonnage. It's a great word. It's an important, investor call word, tonnage. This is probably a lot of tonnage. I don't know how many games, like right now they're airing. They aired two games last night. They're airing, you know, what's happening tonight. Indiana Fever is going head to head with Dynamite. So if you want your excuses, or we want to yell at people for bringing up excuses, there's the one for tomorrow. But it's $200 million. That's in maybe on the high end of what AEW is hoping for. I can't see AEW providing a similar amount of tonnage though. It signals to me that maybe, you know, that they didn't get an even bigger deal than this. Is it setting a going rate for AEW being worth a little bit less than they would like to be worth?
Yeah, I feel that with AEW, like, to me, what is most contingent here is Dynamite, that I think is a very valuable property, no matter what you want to look at in terms of where it's moved, where the popularity is. Like, I think that's a very solid cable property that you have 52 weeks a year. Collision, you can argue, is, you know, it's a nice complementary program. And does WBD have room for this on the schedule? You would think so, that with so much free real estate, when they come to the conclusion that the NBA is not going to be on their networks, that, you know, what are we looking at that is a reasonable substitute that is going to fill some of these hours and do reliable audiences week after week, that in the grand scheme of things is a great savings over the NBA. So I look at that as really the keys to this deal for AEW. But as you've mentioned many times, your ability to get these increases, it's a lot based on what are the options you have. What are, if we are to believe they are in the non-exclusive negotiating period, who is calling up Tony Khan? Who is kicking the tires on AEW programming? Because if that's a small list, that gives a lot of leverage to WBD. Like, AEW is not in such a position where it can, you know, demand a large increase that it's going to have the impact on carriage fees. Like, I don't think AEW is at that scope where they can command that. At the same time, I don't think it's programming that WBD is just rolling its eyes at or taking for granted either. Like, it's a solid, like, middle tier programming that is nice to have if you're WBD.
Yeah. It's clearly a show that WBD is happy with, given things like the overrun, how much they have promoted it throughout NBA games. I guess, you know, looking at the other deals that are happening, looking at the NXT deal, looking at the WNBA deal and all the tonnage that that's going to provide. We're now probably out of the exclusive negotiating window, probably 2 weeks. I just have questions about, you know, who knows what they're going to do. WBD just laid off, I believe, over 1,000 workers, Variety reported yesterday.
Yes.
I believe there's one analyst report saying that WBD should just look for strategic options, which means look for a merger and acquisition from some other company. And it sheds a lot of uncertainty onto WBD's future and therefore the strategy of these two networks being TBS and TNT. If you're going to lose the NBA, which it's not completely clear yet, they're going after the Amazon rights. They think that they should be able to match the Amazon rights. The NBC rights are too rich for their blood, but maybe the Amazon rights. Who knows what's going to happen there? But if they do lose the NBA, which seems more likely than not, maybe you reconsider your strategy in terms of what you're going to be spending on, and you go after something like UFC, or go after other rights that you don't currently have. And it just puts uncertainty onto AEW for me. Not to say that, you know, not to be a doomer here, but it puts more uncertainty onto it to me than before, I guess.
Yeah. It's also worth noting that WBD, they do have their earnings report coming up August the 7th. So we will see, are the letters AEW uttered over that earnings call by Mr. Zaslav?
I don't think they ever have been. So it wouldn't be a shock if they are not.
We will see. Maybe if a Brandon Ross sneaks in there into the calls, that's maybe the best chance of AEW being asked about.
Yeah. I'm sure there'll be many questions about the NBA. At what point, because this deal is going to expire at the end of December, at what point do you get worried that and start to question whether the clock ticking down to the wire is a concern and is a negative signal about the value of the TV rights?
I think we're getting closer. I think if we're getting into the start of the fall season and there's no deal announced, I think that is, whether rightly or wrongly, that is going to be a thought that people are going to have, and you're going to have people that are going to fan the flames one way or the other about that. Like from AEW side, it would be very valuable for them to get word out that they are, that there are interested parties, that there are, I don't know if that's the game they want to play though, because this has been, you know, Tony Khan at least, like, they have been so loyal to this company and will not even utter the idea of talking to anybody else, even though it would be very valuable to them to have those stories out there that there are interested parties that are seeking them out. Because, yeah to answer your question, I would say, like, come September, I think that that discussion is going to ramp up a lot where everyone is still like, kind of in wait-and-see mode at the moment.
September 1st, John Pollock says, that's when you pull the alarm.
You know what? Labor Day. That's when
Labor Day.
Labor Day, it's like if there isn't a baby arriving on Labor Day, there's going to be problems, okay? So I think it's like once the NBA deals are sealed, that's the attention that everyone is putting on WBD. And you have UFC lurking in the background on top of all of this as this the next big prized rights that are out there. So
I was looking at maybe Formula One is within a reasonable time frame to look at too. I had something else, but we can move on.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health. Their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today.
We're going to come back to this because I do want to talk about some of the TV numbers, but we are going to shift our focus because coming up this weekend, it is the start of the G1 Climax, and boy, is it tournament season in Japan. We have the G1 Climax going down, Stardom's 5-star Grand Prix, which in past years has felt like the longest tournament in all of sports that just goes forever. We now have the announcement Marigold is going to do their own Grand Prix as soon as Stardom's Grand Prix ends. Plus, we got the N1 starring Tavion Heights and Josh Briggs. Well, today we're focusing on the G1. And here, batting cleanup, here to save the day, it's the MVP of Pollock and Thurston. Karen Peterson is here with us. Karen, hello.
Hello, gentlemen. Hello, everyone.
Hello, Karen.
That was the most urgent bat signal I have had to send out in quite some time, folks.
It's been a while.
I was literally typing at about 3:01 p.m. and Karen, so diligent. I was like, we've got to get Karen. And Karen, you are remarkable when it comes to getting back to people. It's a very underappreciated skill, but one that I personally, I place very highly among people is how fast I get back to people.
I feel like you just timed it perfectly because I ended up having to take a late lunch today because a student came in just as I was trying to go to lunch. So I was like, you know what? I'm on campus, but it worked out that I would clear my schedule for you anyway, John. So it's good to, you know, get ready to kick off tournament season for the next 18 months.
Well, it's a lot of tournaments coming our way in the upcoming future. Before we dive into G1, I just want to get some of your thoughts on the reception to the Marigold pay-per-view this past weekend. Io Sky going back to Japan, and this was, you know, it's been a very short history, but their most successful show. They drew over 3,000 people to Sumo Hall over the weekend, and it seemed to be, I would imagine for most people, their first sampling of Marigold for this pay-per-view.
If anyone has been wondering whatever happened to Saray in NXT or what the big deal about Io Sky was in WWE, watch the Marigold show from this past weekend. You can tell how much Io has had to slow the pace down since she's come to the US because she and Utami went full throttle. It's a fantastic match. I would not be surprised if it gets put onto match of the year contender discussions for this year, just purely because of not just the story between it all, but the amount of wrestling that goes on. And it's just like Utami's just living her best life in this match against Io. And it's Io's first time back in like 6 years since she's come to the US, because she came right around the pandemic and wasn't able to. WWE hasn't toured there in 5 years, and they're actually coming back to Japan next weekend. Yeah, the 25th, 26th, 27th, one show in Osaka and then two shows in Tokyo. And, you know, Suri and Julia was fantastic. You know, it was a little bit of a mini grudge match because, you know, Julia got her hand busted in Marigold's opening show against Suri in the main event with Utami as her tag partner. But, you know, they crowned a new Marigold world champion, and it's things are moving in the right direction for Marigold. And I was actually been so busy with getting ready for the new academic year that I didn't even know that Marigold announced a tournament. So I'm excited for that. But I just need it to be after August. Everything's happening in August.
It's there are a lot of tournaments, as we mentioned, but let's shift focus to the G1. It kicks off this weekend with two shows in Osaka, Saturday and Sunday, running through August the 18th. And while I look at the lineups, and I don't think this is going to necessarily reach the levels of success of some of those peak years that we had, I'm really intrigued by this tournament, Karen, because it almost feels like it's a fresh slate for many people. It's the first post Okada G1 that most are watching. It's the first G1 in a generation without Tanahashi attached to it. Also, for many, the first G1 without Toru Yano in a generation. So you have a lot of fresh blood in this tournament, and I think you can certainly, if you're handicapping things and entering the post-wrestling G1 contest, it's a very tough year to predict what is going to be coming out of these two blocks.
The one thing I am very excited about is how fresh this all feels. Because don't get me wrong, as a staunch Tanahashi and Kenta fangirl, and, you know, loving me some Tomohiro Ishii, a lot of the favorites that I would always cheer for, Yoshihashi included, everybody was getting cut out. But this feels, I don't want to call it like the young man's G1, but like most of the candidates this time around are all under the age of 40. Like, you know, in previous years, you had guys that were in their 40s and 50s, and then, you know, it's their 12th or 15th G1 that they're participating in. And now it's like most of these participants have less than 5 years experience in a G1 tournament, or any experience in a G1 tournament. Like, you know, you have Callum Newman, who's brand new. Another debutant entry is Bolton Oleg. You've got Jake Lee, who may or may not be done with Noah. We still don't know yet, but good looking guys, alas, has seen its farewell send off for him. Konosuke Takeshita is in this, that's probably one of the dark horses you'd want to like earmark for this particular tournament. I think he might be he may not make it to the semis or the finals, but he could definitely be your bracket buster for this tournament.
And it was Kaito Kiyomiya who was in the G1 last year, right, Karen?
Correct. Yes. He was in the block with Sonata and a lot of the fresh returns from Excursion.
And if I recall right, people were kind of disappointed with, I guess, how few wins he got. I mean, do you anticipate New Japan putting over the outside talent this time or not?
Jake Lee may or may not be in Bullet Club War Dogs. We don't know yet because Ghetto has made a proposition to recruit Jake Lee. I don't know how David Finlay feels about that because, you know, David Finlay is supposed to be the leader of the Bullet Club War Dogs. If they let Takeshita wrestle like Takeshita in DDT Takeshita, you could probably put him as someone to watch very closely. I'm one of the first people to admit I thought Kaito Kiyomiya was going to the semifinals last year, and I was very surprised that he didn't make it out of the blocks. So it also depends on how the companies who have sent these participants want their talent booked. I think it all depends on how much control Noah and or AEW may or may not have over how well Takeshita and Jake Lee fare in this tournament, and if they're going to be allowed to make it more of a showcase and not necessarily have them win every single match.
How do you like the format? They're reverting back to two blocks. And on top of that, what would you say are some of the goals of this G1? Because you're taking it to me is representative of a long-term plan to get some of these stars elevated that might not pay dividends this year. We're looking to a year or two down the road, and it might have like the short-term effects of not having a Tanahashi in the G1 going to all these different markets in tournament matches. Like it's a very like risky option that not all bookers are necessarily going to go this direction, but they seem to have a very aggressive stance on this is a rebuilding year.
I think one of the things that makes it feel fresh is that they've sheared off the 40s and 50s. You know, the New Japan dad tier is completely taken off of this. You have no young, I guess you could technically consider Bolton Oleg a young lion, but you don't have any young lion entrance. Everyone's either fresh back from excursion or in that graduating cusp right now. I'm a big fan of quality over quantity, and a lot of, you know, the more seasoned veterans, they have the star power, but you also, I don't want to sit through another tournament watching Tanahashi's knees being held together by love and energy, knowing that he's just there to not win, if that makes any sense.
Who'd be the oldest person in this tournament? Is Cobb?
Naito is probably the oldest, and he's probably in there because one, he is absurdly popular,
he's 42.
But also that, yeah. But yeah, I don't believe there's anyone older than him. The next closest
Cobb is also 42.
And Takagi is either 42 or just a year younger. But
I believe
he's
41.
It feels fresh. And it's not like, you know, as somebody who has to help the post man the desk during the G1 for coverage, when we had the 30 something plus participant G1, like just looking at it gave me a headache. This feels compact. It feels tight. It feels like there's no definitive one way or another. Like, oh, for sure it's Jeff Cobb's year. For sure it's Zack Sabre Jr.'s year. Oh, no, it's going to be Shota Umino. It feels like there's so many unknowns that I personally find it exciting. And I know that a lot of people are worried about it because they think it's lacking star power. But what you have to think about it is that you can ask Bruce and I, because I see Bruce is in the chat. It's all about what is New Japan going to do without Jay White? What are they going to do without Will Ospreay? What are they going to do without Okada? And those were always names that people looked forward to in the G1. Now you have all of these people that we've been pushing for years, begging them to get that win the G1, and they now have that opportunity. So I'm going in very much glass half full. This coming weekend, Bruce and I are covering both days, both Saturday and Sunday, in a very long, monstrous episode because there are so many matches. But I think the good thing is that even though the opening weekend is very heavy with block matches, the rest of the tour doesn't seem to be that way. So I feel like even though Tanahashi isn't in the G1, you know he's going to be there working the shows. A lot of the juniors, of course, they usually end up being in the mixed the tag matches on the undercard to help prepare the block matches for the following day or later on. So it's one of those things where I like the approach because they're actually starting to pull the focus onto the rising star talent that we've been almost demanding them to figure out who New Japan is without Okada, without Tanahashi. You know, Goto and I are the same age. He's 45 now, and he still can go.
So he's the oldest.
He is the oldest.
Yes. Right. Breaking news.
Breaking news. Hiroki Goto is the oldest. But
in fairness, let's be honest, in terms of output, Goto might be 45, but still wrestles like he's 35, whereas Yujiro wrestled like he was 85.
your favorite wrestler. So.
No tears shed for the lack of a Yujiro Takahashi at least in the tournament. I'm sure he will be making his presence felt in some of these matches. But in terms of it's been several months now since Hiroshi Tanahashi was installed as the president, and he has made he's been pretty open about a lot of the changes that they want to make. What have you made so far of do you get a sense of Tanahashi's vision and what he is outlining as, just the fact that he's removing himself from the G1, I think that's pretty telling in and of itself.
I think him stepping back from the spotlight and acknowledging, time waits for no man, and that if he wants to think about the company long-term, he can't put himself before the company. as the company president, the sustainability and the future of the company is what they need to focus on. And, you know, discovering who that next lightning in a bottle is, who's going to carry the company when, you know, he inevitably retires or Naito eventually retires. They need to start, you know, shifting that focus. Yes, they're the reliable, safe choices, but at the same time, you have an embarrassment of riches that are just like biding their time. And I think a lot of people are very excited to see how the company is going to evolve moving forward.
Yeah. Looking at this lineup, and I did do my predictions, which you can do at what URL, John?
Postwrestling.com/G1. You have until Thursday at midnight Eastern to get your picks in, free to submit. I still have to sit down. This is like doing your like year end exam. It's the most taxing contest. But
my picks are in. The title will be defended.
The defending champion, Brandon Thurston. And Karen, I hope you will be throwing your picks into the into
absolutely the not.
Oh.
After coming in second to last the my first year when I was dead last the entire time, I'm either if I can't completely win, I want to completely lose. I can't do in between.
Look at this. just like Tanahashi, removing yourself.
I am gracefully bowing out, but I am manning the announce desk.
Yeah, I never know what I'm doing, but I think I did predict Yota Tsuji. I don't want to throw off any betting lines or anything here, but I think I did predict Yota Tsuji. But like looking at this lineup as I was doing the predictions, it did really strike me how there are a lot of new names here, and I can't help but think of the 1991 G1 where they have Chono and Muto and Hashimoto, and that was really used as a stage to elevate those three stars. And I wonder if there will be a similar strategy for this.
That is a good question. Personally, I am pulling for Zack Sabre Jr. this year. He is one of the ones that has been always at the top of the conversation of the G1 in recent years, but has never won it. Jeff Cobb's another one that I would keep a close eye on. As much as I would love for them to go with Yota Tsuji or, you know, Shota Umino, I like my gut is just telling me this might be Zach's year. It might be coming home, as the our friends across the good old Atlantic like to say.
I did see he made that comment that if he doesn't win the G1, his career is a failure.
Yeah, precisely. But I mean, one of the, like, if I can't get the Kenta backstage promos that are oh so wonderful during the G1, a good Zack Sabre Jr. temper tantrum backstage when he loses to a silly win might make up for it. But it just seems like everyone's like, all business. We don't have any what you would like to call a filler match or a comedy match. All the comedy has been siphoned off on this G1. Yano might be on the undercard, but he's not going to be ruining any blocks with like a 55-second elimination.
Yeah, and as I am looking at the schedule, they have yet to announce undercards for this weekend. They've just, it's all tournament matches. You have 10 tournament matches on the first night, and you have 9 on the second night. So yes, Karen and Bruce will be coming at you Sunday on the Post Wrestling Cafe, reviewing 19 matches. The hardest working people in wrestling podcasting.
It might take us a couple of hours, boss. Just so you know,
yes, this will be quite the weekend. To kick things off, I forgot about these loaded double block nights, but that is coming up this weekend and then running through August 18th. Before we let you go, Karen, New Japan recently finalized their kind of their overseeing now of Stardom, where Stardom is now officially a subsidiary of New Japan Pro Wrestling. What are any of your concerns about this arrangement, and what are some of the positives you could see coming out of this? Like, do you see much changing versus what we have seen during this Bushiroad run era of the two companies?
Well, they are hyping up the Stardom Dream Queendom to Wrestle Kingdom / Wrestle Dynasty New Year's 6 days worth of wrestling, it seems, moving forward, which is exciting but also exceptionally overwhelming. Personally, I would like to see, I don't know if it'll ever happen, but I need them to move Stardom World and merge it into New Japan World and have a one location for all of, if they are under the umbrella now, they need to be on the same streaming platform, bare minimum. They need to start regularly having English commentary for Stardom. And, you know, Wrestle Dynasty is branded as New Japan, Stardom, CMLL, ROH, and AEW. So I know they're planning another historic crossover sometime in the coming year or so, but I need to see more representation of Stardom on their English social media, but also I don't want Stardom to be stripped of everything that has made it so far, if that makes any sense, because I don't want them to all of a sudden like start changing the belts and like, you know, they have the IWGP belt, they have the New Japan Strong belt, they have the Stardom belts, and it's what, how that is all going to fit together. I have not seen any concrete plans so far. So I want to say I'm cautiously optimistic, but I need Mr. Okada and Mr. Tanahashi to draft something a little more concrete before I jump onto the boat blindly and be all excited about it, because there's just too many unknowns for me.
And do you have a sense, Karen, of how much of a threat Marigold is? I'm looking at the list. They've run now 14 shows since their debut show on May 20th. And my impression before Rossi left and started Marigold is that Stardom was the clear leading women's promotion in Japan, but this seems like a real competitor in Marigold.
What's interesting is that Marigold, in the last, even in the last month or so, they keep having new talent joining their roster. Like, they had a former trainee from Sendai Girls recently join them. They had Kizuna Tanaka, who I believe was with Pro Wrestling Wave, join their roster. So their numbers are slowly growing. Honestly, more places for the women to work and more competition isn't necessarily a bad thing, because, you know, Tokyo Joshi Pro and Stardom have always gone head to head in recent years. I am curious to see where their apparent alleged partnership with WWE may or may not go. I don't know if Io Sky coming over is a one-time thing or if it's going to lead to other things, such as, you know, with Noah, they have NXT is sending over two talents for the N1 victory. So I'm curious to see, but I'm not going to say that, you know, Stardom's dead in the water, because they still have the backing of Bushiroad, which is one of the largest idol marketing companies in Japan. And they have the backing of New Japan now, which is arguably the biggest Japanese wrestling promotion in the country with one of the longest histories. So it's one of those things where I just hope it doesn't get to the point where there starts to be a lot of Stardom versus Marigold tribalism, because I'm so tired of tribalism in wrestling. But that's just a nitpick for me. It's like, I just want people to wrestle, get paid what they're worth, have a good time. And, you know, if it makes better wrestling for all of us, then at the end, the fans are the real winners.
Last question, Karen. I'm just looking at the dates here. So Marigold have announced their Dreamstar Grand Prix will begin August 31st, which is the day that Stardom's Grand Prix ends. So there's not really any overlap, and it runs until September 28th. So it's a 1 month tournament. Would you imagine that there probably will be one or two NXT exports that are sent to this tournament?
If WWE is serious about expanding their horizons and attempting to do an NXT Japan, just like focus on building relations with promotions internationally, I think that would be a great opportunity, because the Marigold roster is substantially smaller than the Stardom roster is at this point. Mm-hmm. But it all depends on how, again, you know, bigger isn't necessarily better, but I feel like there is a good opportunity for it. I mean, I would be like, as much as I would love to say, well, yeah, just send Kairi Sane over for like a month to do the tournament. I know that's probably not going to happen, because she's wildly popular on the main roster of WWE. So it's also finding the wrestler or wrestlers that could be the right fit, because how they train at the Performance Center is also different to how business and training is conducted in Japan, if that makes sense.
Karen, we want to thank you very much for jumping on literally last minute. Excellent as always to pick your brain, get your analysis. And again, you can follow all of Karen's work at postwrestling.com, and our coverage of the G1 will be going on throughout the next month at postwrestlingcafe.com, kicking off with Sunday's show with Karen and Bruce Lord, covering the first two nights, 19 matches coming their way and yours, which will be, of course, streaming on New Japan World. But anything else you want to get out there before we say goodbye, Karen?
I mean, I didn't expect to stand in for Walker Stewart today, but apparently it's the second time this week, because I'm also on another podcast called The Nation's Corner tomorrow, and we do an extensive hour and a half discussion about the G1. And so if you want more information about what I'm thinking about when it comes to the G1, follow me at Hey Karen Sensei on Twitter and you'll see it there. Of course, Dreamstar Fighting Marigold, that's not it. Dream Slam Weekly is monthly is my column, and it's out post pro res, all the good stuff. But yeah, that's about it for me. It's all G1 from here on out.
That's it. We hope you get some sleep in between there, Karen, and thanks so much for jumping on again.
No problem. Have thanks, a great Karen. Day, guys.
All right. Karen Peterson joining us. Big thank you to her for jumping on with us. Do you expect, Brandon, you'll be watching any G1?
I'm considering it. I did look. The fact that there are, you know, two shows that open the G1 with nothing but tournament matches is enticing. So I might renew that NJPW World subscription.
Yes, we're coming up on 10 years of New Japan World.
That's right. Late 2014.
Yes. Right? Yes. I remember, yeah. I've told the story before, but the first year that you were able to get the G1, this is when they were on Ustream. It was in 2013, and they offered all the tournament shows for $150 on Ustream, or you could opt into the early bird special, which I did, for $110. And at that time, I was like, $110 for 18 shows. This is the greatest deal in professional wrestling history. And it was a phenomenal tournament. But then all of a sudden you get New Japan World a few years later and it's considerably less for the entire tournament.
Yeah, that was, I wonder like what's a more profitable way to go? It was probably less accessible through Ustream versus being, I don't know, sort of a, I imagine that was in Japanese.
There were like, yeah, it was just Japanese commentary in the Ustream era, but
I mean, like the interface.
Yes, yeah. It was. Ustream was.
Although New Japan World was at first too, I believe.
Yes, it was it was the only bridge you had to live New Japan shows at the time until New Japan World came along. But there you go. That's a G1 again. It's starting this coming weekend, and if you want to join the Post Wrestling G1 contest. Again, it's postwrestling.com/G1, and you have till Thursday at midnight to submit your picks, and you can see how you fare against Brandon Thurston, and I will be getting my picks in as well. I will do dreadfully, but I'm no Brandon Thurston when it comes to booking New Japan in 2024, but we'll see how things hold up. It's a total crapshoot this year. A few other notes that we're going to get to before we sign off. Let's go back to Saturday, and this was the follow-up to the much-discussed AEW Collision that went against Money in the Bank that brought out the best and the worst of a ratings discourse discussion. But this past weekend, it did 362,000 viewers and a 0.14 in the demo. Big rebounds in all of the key demos, including 18-49, 18-34, and what was interesting is, no, they were not going up against a WWE show, which is, you know, historically what attacks or harms the AEW Collision number the most. But this was literally hours, Brandon, after the assassination attempt on Donald Trump. And that was just, of course, dominating all news coverage on Saturday night. And on top of it, a tape show, which I think has very little effect on AEW's audience. But this was, you know, a rebound number, at least from a really poor number the week prior.
Yeah, I was surprised. I did look it up for this report that shots were fired in Pennsylvania at 6:11. So this show started at 8. So it's not like this was, you know, hours and hours after the news started to break. This was pretty early in the course of the news breaking. So I was kind of surprised that it didn't really affect the rating. And the rating was obviously was going to be up from the prior week when it did one of the lowest ratings of the year against the WWE show. But this was did a fine rating. I guess wrestling fans, not particularly politically engaged, perhaps you could glean from this.
Well, it's been a long time since we've had one of these like real world event comparisons, because back in the Wednesday Night War, like that was sort of the pattern that we would see, is that NXT audience would pretty much stay untouched. And there was, like, of course, January 6th of 2021 occurred on a Wednesday. And when you typically had those major events that might affect cable news, it was the AEW audience that would be more susceptible to, you know, losing audience on those big news nights. And again, a smaller sample size here on a Collision than a big Dynamite. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't just unchanged. It was actually up pretty significant from the week prior. So I don't know if that you know, reflects on some of the demographic changes of who is watching AEW. But those people, they wanted that Konosuke Takeshita Tommy Billington match on Saturday night, and they weren't going to let any real world events get in the way of that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens when, I don't know, when the RNC will be tonight too, for what that's worth. If you need another excuse on top of the WNBA game for why the Dynamite rating tonight might not be good, we'll have the DNC later.
You know who's speaking on Thursday at the RNC?
On Thursday? No. Who?
The final speaker who will introduce Donald Trump is the same man who spoke at the 2016 Republican National Convention, and I'll give you a clue of how he welcomed everybody.
What's up, GOP?
Dana White. Guess,
oh, it's Dana White. Okay. I was going to guess Mayor Kane.
Amazingly, Mayor Kane has not been able to navigate the inner circle of Trump world to get a invite.
Needs to tweet more.
The RNC. Yeah, he's just not tweeting
or
enough,
truth,
clearly.
Whatever, yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, that's happening on Thursday. We'll get a Dana White speech at the RNC on wow. Thursday evening. That Thursday night, I think that would be a terrible night to be going up against, because I think it's that will be, you know, Trump doing a big speech at the end. I guess Impact is in for a rough competition on Thursday night. That would be the thought.
It'll be tough.
And then going to Raw on Monday night, we had the show airing against the Home Run Derby, and they did 1,669,000 viewers and a 0.56 in the 18 to 49 demo. So they were down a bit from the prior week, from a 0.59 in Canada, doing 284,000 viewers as well. They actually edged out the Home Run Derby in the key demo in Canada by just several hundred viewers.
Yeah. So this was what? Was this a normal rating? I think it was down slightly from what they usually do.
Not too much that you can take from this week's number. And I guess coming up, NXT has announced that next Tuesday, but the following two Tuesdays, they will be moving to Sci-Fi because of the Olympics. And The Observer has reported there will be two episodes of Raw that will also air on Sci-Fi due to USA Network's commitment to the Summer Olympics. So you're going to get 2 weeks.
This happened a couple of years ago, right? Was it the Winter Olympics or this? It couldn't have been. Well, the postponed.
The delayed Summer Olympics.
Yeah.
Yeah, that aired. The Tokyo ones in 2021.
Yeah. Very, very rare that Raw has ever been preempted since the dog show days.
Oh, the Westminster Dog Show. I'm sure there's like a catalog of fans that have no idea. The Westminster Dog Show and how it was the bane of wrestling fans' existence once a year.
Yes. I mean, imagine the ad rates on the Westminster Dog Show. What are the TV rights like for the Westminster Dog Show? I'm scrambling to look it up, but I'm not going to find it.
You would be the person I would be DMing to ask that question. So
the U.S. Open used to preempt Raw, yep. I remember, but that has not. I don't know what the deal is with that. That'll be coming up too this August, but yeah.
There was the Raw in the first time, not the first time, but in the peak of the Attitude Era, they did that big Raw from the Sky Dome in 1999, which I attended, and it aired live in Canada, but was preempted in the States until the following Saturday. They didn't air it till Saturday. So you had you had 5 days of being held off because of the dog show.
Yes. The good old dog show.
That's your history lesson now for the day, everybody.
Yes.
That's it. Is there anything else you wanted to discuss? Quiz?
I don't think so. I think we're good.
Reflect on. We are going to be coming back on Thursday, actually Friday, with a new Rewind Away. Waiting and I are going back. We are chatting about the 2001 WWF Invasion pay-per-view, which to this day stands as the most successful non-WrestleMania pay-per-view in WWE's history. The lone bright spot of this awfully handled storyline with WWF, WCW, and ECW. All coming.
The Alliance, because of course they had to just bought that IP. Nah, we'll just, you know, needs a better brand.
Well, then they found out they don't even have the rights to use ECW. And
that happened.
And, oh, yeah. That's how they had to move to the Alliance. They just started using, the music. They started using the letters. And I was like, we actually don't have the rights to any of this. So it was well handled, to say the least. But if there was one bright spot that people look at, it was that pay-per-view, which amazingly did do tremendous business for that one night. And then everything fell apart, and that was kind of the end of the invasion.
Yeah, I've never seen this pay-per-view, by the way.
Well,
maybe I'll watch it and listen to Rewind Away.
I was killing time here because I wanted to pull this up. Last week, we got a piece of feedback after Dynamite, and I thought it was a better question for this show than last week. So this comes from Matthew England, okay? And he asks, do you think that there will come a time when WWE takes the media more seriously and is covered as a legitimate sport rather than the kayfabe that we currently see? My quick answer to that first part would be no. While I understand it's fundamentally a kayfabe business, there are certain valid concerns that need to be addressed and accountability that need to be upheld. WWE aims to gain more mainstream recognition and is growing rapidly. It's noteworthy that UFC, also under TKO, receives coverage from a far wider array of mainstream outlets than WWE does. Do you believe this disparity in media coverage will prompt WWE to enhance its transparency and potentially garner more attention from mainstream media outlets? I know I'm throwing a heavy bomb here at the end of things, but I think it's worth comparing the coverage that UFC gets as related to WWE. I don't find it all that different, to be quite honest, between the two. I think both have leaned very heavily into like content creator culture, and that is a lot of what they lean into, and that's where that is a lot of the coverage that they receive, and I think it is very similar in that they get, I think there's mainstream coverage of both. But I think what comes with that is a lot of like what stories are the larger outlets covering when it comes to WWE stories and UFC stories, because there are some topics that like this antitrust suit, like look how much coverage it receives. And this is a story that could have like literally like dramatic changes to the industry if this were to go to trial. And I don't know if it's been, you know, covered as heavily except for, you know, isolated reporters and outlets out there.
Judge Bowler is doing his best to keep it alive. So you would say that the degree of MMA specific media is similar to the degree of wrestling specific media?
I would say that I think
by proportion.
You've seen a lot of outlets that have downsized on the MMA side of things that were doing like real reporting, real journalism, like those jobs are going away. In wrestling, it's always been a very small number, I think, that are doing those. But I see a lot of people that were doing MMA reporting full time, like those jobs are going down. And like you've seen, like from The Athletic that signed up a lot of writers a number of years ago and then pretty much like just dissolve their whole MMA vertical. And you're just seeing it with other outlets as well. Like that, I think MMA media, it's become very difficult to make a living in. And the people that are having the most success appear to be those ones that are doing more of your content creator type of material. And that is making up a large portion of it. And I would say in professional wrestling, like if I were to give advice to someone, like not so much, like if someone were to come to you, Brandon, and say, what is the way I can be the most successful covering professional wrestling? It's doing a lot of the things that people are probably going to be upset at the fact like that wrestling does not need more of this type of content, but it is.
By successfully mean making money, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like that is your key to doing this. Like I would not necessarily feel great about telling someone, well, follow exactly the path that I've done. Like that is the way to just, you can do this, but it's to me a tougher way to go about it.
I don't know. Like I think the way to try to make a lot of money, I don't know, is in wrestling media is still like about like getting access to, I don't know, like talent interviews and coming across well in those. And I think that's still difficult. It's still difficult to provide the unique value that is, just as I think it's hard to provide the unique value that we provide. If we take the ethics part of it away for a second, I think largely having a degree of economic success in wrestling media is about providing something that people aren't getting elsewhere. There's a zillion reviews of Dynamite and of Raw. But But having a unique perspective, or having an entertaining perspective, or having a truly insightful perspective is the rare thing, is the valuable thing, I guess.
I think that's the key, is that ultimately you want to hopefully build a reputation for yourself that people want to seek you out, because there's going to be so many options when it comes to, you know, there's a big story. Hopefully there's enough people out there that when a story breaks, I want to hear what a Brandon Thurston has to say about it that is unique to him. That's what you're trying to build. But if you're trying,
and I don't have the question in front of me. Is the question, would it be to WWE's advantage to be more transparent, because it would improve the quality of the media coverage that they get, and then therefore help their businesses in other ways? There's an ant on.
Yeah. Do you believe this disparity in media coverage will prompt WWE to enhance its transparency and potentially garner more attention from mainstream media outlets? Maybe what he's trying to get around is that when there is this sort of kind of protectiveness around the product and how handled the talent are in these situations, that a lot of mainstream media keep their hands off of professional wrestling because they don't view it as worthy of their coverage. I would argue, like, people are a lot more open to covering pro wrestling these days at a lot of these outlets that was not there a generation ago. But you have so many people that have now, you know, they were fans of wrestling at a certain point in their lives. They've now grown up and they're in these positions of media. And frankly, with a lot of the figures that TKO has assembled, these are gateways to a lot of these outlets. That a Nick Khan going to a WWE is a major story in sports media. And having these figures, it becomes a really appealing sports business story to be covering TKO and to be covering WWE and UFC. And we see that. Yeah, like it's not weird to see WWE covered in the Hollywood Reporter or a Sports Business Journal. Like, that is, it's not regular day-to-day coverage, but they are not going to shy away from WWE business stories.
Yeah, for the most part. Legal stories.
I said business stories.
I think maybe the most realistic pathway is, you know, we know there are outlets like, I think, you know, the New York Post, the Athletic, I guess SBJ, who have writers who will cover WWE, but they don't have like somebody who's a wrestling reporter. Maybe you could have a future where these outlets actually do get a more dedicated combat sports reporter or wrestling reporter. That could happen. And some outlets do have that, right? Like ESPN has a dedicated, at least MMA reporter, if not combat sports reporter. Like Justin Barrasso, Sports Illustrated, I think is a full-time pro wrestling reporter for Sports Illustrated. You could have more of that throughout the mainstream sports media. Or maybe the entertainment media. I think that's a question of like why you get past the fake issue if you're the entertainment media. You don't have to worry about putting legit sports alongside pro wrestling and the stigma that brings. And we don't see any of that out of the entertainment media, like Variety. And we see them cover big news stories, right? When there's a TV deal or something, they're covering it. But you don't see the same sort of beat reporting, I would say, as you do see out of the sports outlets for wrestling. But I think that's, if something like that were to happen, which I'm not necessarily bullish on, but that's sort of the pathway, I guess, for more of that to happen. Now, if that happens, though, I don't necessarily expect, you know, investigative reporting to come out of that. I expect relationships to be protected, and because they want to do talent interviews and things like that.
Well, there, a great question from Matthew England. So thank you for sending that in to us. All right, that's going to wrap things up. Again, a big thank you to Karen Peterson for joining us earlier on today to chat about the G1. And coming up this weekend, you can catch WrestleNomics Sunday, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, patreon.com/WrestleNomics. Brandon has a laundry list of topics that he is going to be getting to. He has shared them with me privately. You're going to have to tune in Sunday to see what he has planned for you. Maybe he's going to do a live watch along with the 9 G1 matches from Osaka on Sunday morning. He'll be catching up on the A and B block on night 2.
Yes, who knows? We'll see.
Next week, I feel I could jinx it if I state that we have a guest. We tentatively have a guest scheduled for next week. Tune in next week to find out who, because I'm not tempting fate anymore when it comes. But we have a commitment for a guest next week. So look out for that. And thanks to everyone for joining us. For all your latest news, go to postwrestling.com and wrestlenomics.com. And that is it for us. Thank you, everybody.